Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's golden years. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. Quiz programs coming up in this hour. Later on, we hear Second Chance, hosted by Johnny Olson. But right now, Clifton Fadiman moderates the quiz program Information Please from August 1st, 1941 on NBC. With regular panelists Franklin P. Adams and John Kieran, we'll also hear Lyman Bryson of Columbia University and Henry McCracken, at the time president of Vassar College.
It's 8:30, New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike throws a coast-to-coast party at which you and four experts provide the entertainment. For every question we use, Lucky Strike pays out $10 plus a copy of the new Information Please quiz book. If your question stumps us, you get $25 more plus a 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid. And all questions become the property of Information Please. I present our master of ceremonies, the literary critic of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, Information Please, as you know, is completely spontaneous and unrehearsed. Tonight, that pair of veterans is back on the job, the lyrist and New York Post conning tower man, Franklin P. Adams, and his learned sidekick, the naturalizing sports expert, Mr. John Kieran. Our two guests are both distinguished educators, Professor Lyman Bryson of Columbia University, known to millions as the director of the People's Platform, and the president of Vassar College, Dr. Henry Noble McCracken. Now remember, for each question missed, Lucky Strike rings up $25. And that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. We're off with a question coming to us from Mr. L.V. Espy of Prineville, Oregon. This is about famous sons. Who is or was the son of the following? Get 3 out of 4. The son of Mary Ball, B-A-L-L. Who is or was the son of Mary Ball? I have them stumped. Right off the reel. The son of Mary Ball, Mr.
Is Mary Ball, Mrs. Custis?
Are you asking
Lady?
Me?
Yes.
You just tell me. To whom did Mary Ball give birth, who later became a reasonably celebrated person? Well, the son of Mary Ball became, later on, in due time, the father of his country, George Washington.
George Washington.
Yes, that's right. George Washington was the son of Mary Ball. I have to count that as one wrong. Now we have to get the next three right.
Well, who? I said Custis. That was, that wasn't quite right.
No, not quite right. Got into the family, but that's about all.
That was Mrs. George Washington.
That's right. That's right. Who is or was the son of Agrippina the Younger? The son of Agrippina the Younger, Dr. McCracken.
Nero.
Nero, yes, the Emperor Nero. I say Agrippina the Younger. Apparently there was an Agrippina the Elder, I should judge.
That was the grandfather.
Agrippina the Elder also produced a very famous son. Any idea?
Caligula?
That's right, Mr. Kieran. Caligula is correct. That's extra. You didn't have to answer that, Mr. Kieran. Get an extra point for that. Who was the son of Letizia Ramolino? Letizia Ramolino.
Oh.
Mr. Kieran?
Well, of course, that's an Italian. Was that one of the popes?
No. Oh, no.
Well, and it must be Mussolini.
No, no.
Leonardo da Vinci.
No. A very famous Italian, as a matter of fact, Napoleon Bonaparte. His mother was Letizia Ramolino. That gives us 2 sons wrong out of 4. How about this one? Who is or was the son of Joe Yule? Y-U-L-E. The son of Joe Yule. No idea, gentlemen? Must say your genealogy is defective. The son of Joe Yule is Mickey Rooney, who was born Joe Yule, Jr. That gives us 3 wrong out of 4, which is quite insufficient, and sends $25 to Mr. Espy, plus a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica, courtesy of Lucky Strike. Now, see whether you can do any better on this one. I think this is much easier. Here's one from F.N. Sanford of Maplewood, New Jersey. It's about elopements, gentlemen. Name the character in literature who eloped with a poet and a dog in literature or literary history. Mr. Kieran.
Elizabeth Barrett Browning.
Yes, that's quite right. What was the dog's name?
Flush.
Gee. A straight flush from all you gentlemen. That's right. And the man she eloped with, of course, was...
Robert Browning.
Robert Browning. Quite right. Now, who eloped with a man and a bucket? Mr. Curran.
A young lady from Pawtucket. No, not
Nantucket. Nantucket, yes. Can you give us her whole saga?
There was a young lady of Nantucket. There was no man of Nantucket who kept all his gold in a bucket. He had a daughter named Nan who ran off with a man. And as for the bucket, Nantucket.
Attaboy. That's perfect. Mr. Curran now qualifies as an elopement expert. How about this one? Who eloped with a man and a horse? A man and a horse. Mr. Dr. McCracken.
The bride of young Lochinvar.
Yes, the bride of young Lochinvar. What was her name?
Fair Ellen.
Ellen.
Yes, no. I think Fair was just sort of attached to her name.
Fair W. Ellen was her name.
You make it sound very convincing, but if you wanted to look her up in the telephone book, you'd have to look her up under the name of Netherby. Ellen Netherby. Netherby. Oh. Ellen Netherby, who ran off with a man and a horse. The man being young Lochinvar. Well, that gives us three elopements out of three. How about this one from Marie Wilmot of Akron, Ohio? Get three out of four. Gentlemen, let us assume that you are living in the year 1776, and you wanted the following things done. Which signer of the Declaration of Independence would you call on to help you? If, for example, you wanted a book published. Dr. McCracken.
Benjamin Franklin.
Benjamin Franklin. I don't know whether he was the first... one of the first successful book publishers, I suppose, in this country. Now, suppose you wanted a doctor... and wanted to use only a signer of the Declaration of Independence. A doctor. Mr. Curran.
I'm not quite sure. Dr. Warren?
No, I don't know whether Dr. Warren was a signer.
Well, that's what I was in doubt about.
I think he was a doctor, all right.
He was a doctor.
Yes,
good
he was.
One, I hear.
Dr. Benjamin Franklin.
No.
They did call him Dr. Franklin, as Mr. Adams reminds us, but of course he wasn't a real M.D. Mr. Bryson, did you have an idea there?
Yes, but I gave it up.
It might have been right, Dr. McCracken.
Dr. Rush.
Rush is quite right.
Benjamin Rush.
Benjamin Rush, Mr. Adams, that's quite right. There were three other doctors, Josiah Bartlett, Lyman Hall, and Matthew Thornton. Now, suppose you wanted to buy some tea. Which signer of the Declaration of Independence would you apply to?
T. Jefferson.
A sprightly fellow you are, Mr. Adams. I've got to get the correct answer in addition to the funny one. Dr. McCracken?
Well, Samuel Adams, because he must have saved some of the tea out of Boston Harbor.
Well, that's a slick answer, but he wasn't a merchant as John Hancock was. John Hancock.
Jen Hancock was an insurance
agent. He was an insurance agent.
That's the one you boys know. And finally, gentlemen, if you wanted to write a song, to whom would you apply? And wanted to get a signer of the Declaration to write it for you. Write a song. Dr. McCracken, was that your hand up?
Freneau?
I beg your pardon?
I don't think Freneau signed the Declaration.
No, he did not.
No.
I don't think he wrote music. I'm not certain about
that. Oh, I think you want to...
Must have been Button Gwinnett.
I beg pardon?
Must have been Button Gwinnett.
No, that's if you wanted to collect signatures. You would get his signature, but...
That's a good name.
A very good name. The answer would be Francis Hopkinson, who was our first American poet-composer. He's also remembered because very probably, though we're not sure, he designed
Mr. Smith
the American
was named
flag.
After him.
Mr. Smith?
Francis Hopkinson
Smith is quite right. But that gives us two wrong out of four and sends $25 to Marie Wilmot, plus a set of the encyclopedia. And Lucky Strike is losing rapidly and cheerfully so far this evening. Here's one from H.W. Mallory of San Leandro, California. Get two out of three. Oh, gosh, this is another hard one. Quote the line that precedes each of these lines. This is very tough. The first is, to throw a perfume on the violet. What's the line that goes before it? Mr. Curran.
To paint the lily, to gild refined gold. Isn't that right?
That's right.
That's from King John, I believe.
It is right.
By Shakespeare, W. Shakespeare.
Yes. To gild refined gold, to paint the lily, which is the famous line, and not very many people remember the next one, as Mr. Curran did, to throw a perfume on the violet. Now, how about this one? This gets harder, Mr. Curran. A little month, or ere those shoes were old. What's the line that comes before that? A little month, or ere those shoes were old. Mr. Curran?
Well, of course, it's Hamlet.
It is indeed.
And inconstancy, thy name is Woman, or something like that.
Yes, you've got everything but the right name.
Frailty.
Yes, that's right. Anna W. Frailty, thy name is Woman. That's quite right. Now, here is another one. I think this gets tougher. 'Twas mine, 'tis his, and has been slave to thousands. I have several hands. Dr. McCracken, was your hand up? Just tentative. Mr. Adams.
Who steals my purse steals trash.
That's quite right. That's exactly right, Mr. Adams. And what's it from?
Macbeth.
No. Choose another. Keep going. Mr. Kieran.
It's Iago. Othello.
Iago and Othello, yes. Well, that gives us 3 out of 3. I thought you'd flop on that one, gentlemen. You're very good. Mr. Ralph Murray of Maplewood, New Jersey, sends this one in. Get 2 out of 3 again. I'm going to give you several groups of names. In each group that I give you, one of these names is out of place. It just doesn't belong in the group. Which one is it and why? Here's the first group. Austerlitz, Marengo, Jena, Leipzig. Which of those names doesn't belong with the other three? Dr. McCracken?
Marengo.
Why?
Because it was not fought in the Napoleonic Wars.
Marengo was not fought in the Napoleonic Wars? I think it was. Dr. Bryson.
Well, the other two are in Germany. It's in Italy, and the other three are in Germany.
That might be. I won't accept that one. That's not really what distinguishes the one from the other. Mr. Kieran.
I don't recognize the Battle of Leipzig. I recognize Jena and Marengo and Austerlitz as Napoleonic victories.
Well, that's the
whole Leipzig
point.
Was the great defeat of Napoleon.
I beg pardon?
Leipzig was the great defeat of Napoleon
exactly
by the Allies.
Right, Dr. McCracken, and that's the point. Leipzig was the only one of those battles that Napoleon lost. It preceded his exile to Elba. Yes. I should like to count you right, Dr. McCracken, but you came in just a little late on that, so I have to count you wrong. You know, you must raise your hand at once, Dr. McCracken, get the right answer. You know how it is in the classroom yourself. Now, here's another set of names. Axiom, Lepanto, Le Mans, Trafalgar. Which one of those is out of place? Dr. Bryson.
Well, I think Trafalgar is a naval battle.
Yeah?
The others are land battles.
Are they?
Aren't they?
Mr. Kieran?
You calling on me?
I am indeed.
The Marne was a land battle across the river. The other three were naval battles.
Yes, that's right. The Battle of the Marne is the only one that was fought on land. The others are all famous naval battles, Actium, Lepanto, and Trafalgar. We'll have to count that wrong. You raised your hand too quickly, Mr. Bryson. Now you have a chance to retrieve yourself, though not to get the $25 back that we're going to lose. Emilie, Yvette, Cécile, Annette. Which of those doesn't belong where it is? Mr. Adams.
One of them is not one of the Dions.
Which one?
Tell it over.
I will indeed. Emilie, Yvette, Cécile, Annette. How about it, Mr. Adams? The old Dion expert. Dr. McCracken.
Yvette.
Why not?
She's not one of the...
She's not one of the Dion quintuplets. Does she remind you of any one of them? Does her name remind you of any of them? Mr. Bryson.
There's an Yvonne, isn't there?
Yes, it should be Yvonne, not Yvette. By the way, I didn't name the fifth of the Quins. What is the last of them?
Say the four again.
Emilie, Yvonne now, Cécile, Annette.
There's one beginning with M.
Yes, and how does it go on? You can just call her
Marie.
Yvonne. Marie is right, Mr. Adams, thank you. Well, I'm afraid that loses us $25 in the Encyclopedia Britannica. Courtesy of Lucky Strike.
Quinn.
Which... How about this one, gentlemen, from Max Deutsch of St. Louis, Missouri. Can you give me 3 literary or play titles that indicate a character's financial condition? Titles of plays or books or novels that indicate whether a man is poor or rich or in between. Mr. Bryson.
Of course, there's Molière's play, The Miser, L'Avare.
That's a very good one. I'll take that. Mr. Adams.
The Million-Pound Banknote by Mark Twain.
A Million-Pound Banknote by Mark Twain, that's correct. Very good. I don't know whom it would belong to, but I'll accept that as a proper title. Dr. McCracken.
Ready Money.
Ready Money is good. It's a farce, isn't it? Mr. Kieran?
The 12-Pound Look.
The 12-Pound Look by James Barry is a very good one. Well, we have more than 3 or 4. Mr. Bryson.
Brewster's Millions.
Brewster's Millions is a very good one. Mr. Adams.
Very Hard Cash.
By Charles Reed.
By Charles Reed.
I think it's just Hard Cash. Always exaggerating.
Very hard cash.
Is it very hard cash? Are you sure it isn't hard cash, Dr.
Very
McCracken?
Hard cash.
You wouldn't like to make a small bet on that, would you?
Yes, I would.
All right.
Bet some very hard cash on
All
that.
Right. Well, that was correctly done. Now, so far, Lucky Strike has paid out $75 and 3 sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica. And now we'll go on with the second half of the program this evening, opening with a question from Eileen Roush of Minocqua, Wisconsin. Get 2 out of 3, if you can. Each of these men that I shall name was or is an intimate friend of a famous man. Name the famous friend. The first, I think, is rather easy. William Herndon. Famous friend, Dr. McCracken.
Abraham Lincoln.
Yes, we had everybody's hand up on that. Abraham Lincoln. Herndon was what, in what relation to Abraham Lincoln?
He was his law partner.
He was his law partner.
He wrote
and
his biography.
Collected materials for his life and wrote a biography. Arthur Henry Hallam, H-A-L-L-A-M, Mr. Bryson.
He was a friend of Tennyson.
He was a friend of Alfred Lord Tennyson, yes. Now, he was commemorated by Tennyson in what
Tennyson
point?
Wrote in memoriam.
In memoriam, to commemorate his friendship with Hallam. Homer Brown. Homer Brown. Intimate friend of a famous man. Homer Brown. I've never seen a blanker look. Homer Brown is the friend of Henry Aldrich, of the Aldrich family. I think you all might know that. Just slipped by on that with 2 out of 3. How about this one from Mabel F. Moore of St. Paul, Minnesota? Who were the eyewitnesses of these incidents? In some cases, there was just one eyewitness, in some cases, more than one. Get 3 out of 4. Who witnessed the suicide of Titwillow? The suicide of Titwillow. Mr. Bryson.
The wandering minstrel witnessed the suicide.
His name being? Well, you like to have names, if not addresses.
Well, it's in the Mikado.
It did not.
Nanki Poo.
That's the wrong answer, isn't it? Who did witness the... Mr. Adams, who was the witness of the suicide of Titwillow?
Coco.
Coco. Coco is right. Mr. Adams, you should have had your hand up. Quickly.
I did. Didn't do much good.
Who witnessed the fight between the gingham dog and the calico cat? Famous and sanguinary encounter, Mr. Kieran?
The China plate, I think, wasn't it? Or
that was
like
one
that.
Of the eyewitnesses, the Chinese plate.
Chinese
and there's another. The story comes from whom? Who?
Eugene Field.
Eugene Field, Mr. Adams.
I still never have read that piece.
Well, would you like to know the name of it so that you can look it up?
Well, I have one witness. Doesn't that get us by?
I think it'll get you by, Mr. Kieran. The old Dutch clock was the other witness. The old Dutch clock and the Chinese plate witnessed the fight between the gingham dog and the calico cat. A matter of, on the whole, very little importance. Who were the eyewitnesses of the appearances of the ghost of Hamlet's father? There's a complicated answer on this one. Dr. McCracken, want to start us off?
Horatio.
Horatio is right.
And the two sentries.
Yes, their names? We love names on this program. Names, dates. Mr. Kieran?
One was Marcellus.
First and second century.
Marcellus was one.
Yes, Marcellus is one. And the other was...
Bernardino.
Bernardo, that's right. Marcellus.
He's the fellow that said, 'Tis bitter cold and I am sick at heart.
Is that the chant?
No.
There was one other eyewitness. None of you have
Hamlet.
Known him. Hamlet, Mr. Kieran, that's quite right. Who witnessed the death of Cock Robin? Mr. Adams.
I said the sparrow.
Wait a minute. Hold on. You're too impulsive.
The death?
Yes, the death.
I said the fly with my little eye.
Who saw him die? I said the fly. Let's see. We seem to have got... just about got by on that one, I think. How about this one from H.S. Howard of Hollywood, California? If each of these men followed the profession that his name seemed to imply, what would he be doing? His last name, I mean. The first is Happy Chandler. Mr. Bryson.
You'd be making candles.
Yes, Chandler is a candle maker originally. It's come to mean what?
A dealer in candles and that kind of gear.
For ships.
You know?
Yes, a ship chandler is one who deals in ship's gear of all sorts. Groceries, provisions, raincoats, and all that sort of thing. Who is Happy Chandler, by the way?
He's a Kentucky statesman.
Yes.
United States Senator. Former governor.
Yes, a congressman. How about Art Fletcher? Art Fletcher. If Art Fletcher, Mr. Bryson?
He'd be an arrow maker.
An arrow maker, yes. A Fletcher is one who fletches or feathers arrows.
And who he is.
And I bet he doesn't know, Mr. Kieran. Mr. Bryson, who is Art Fletcher?
What's his first name?
Art. Arthur.
I don't know.
Time is fleeting, by the way.
I don't know.
He's now a coach.
He's a baseball player. Can you identify him further, Mr. Kieran?
Yes, he's the baseball coach of the Yankees, assistant to Joe McCarthy, the manager.
And will you let him know, Mr. Kieran, what his last name means in case he doesn't happen to know himself?
I think he knows. He knows a lot, that fellow.
Well, all right. I wasn't questioning his knowledge. Now, we have the name William Brewster. Originally, Dr. McCracken, William Brewster?
He brewed beer.
You're almost right. You're almost right. A Brewster was not a brewer, but a female brewer. That's why they called her a Brewster. Who was William Brewster, Dr. McCracken?
He was the minister of the Mayflower.
Yes, one of the early American colonists. That's quite right. Well, we seem to have done all right on that one. How about... Well, this is right up the alleys of Mr. Bryson and Dr. McCracken. It comes from Virginia Gilbert of Salinas, California, and it's about school teachers. Not real ones, such as we have on this program tonight, but imaginary ones. Now, the first one, there was a busybody school teacher who was a great success as a detective. Who is that? There are going to be three of these. I had a feeling you wouldn't know this. Mr. Adams?
Was that the Chesterton...
Father Brown? No, Father Brown was not a schoolteacher, as one can tell from his title. Hildegard Withers in the stories by Stuart Palmer, a famous detective in a series of detective stories. That gives us one wrong. Now, this school mom started a school in her own home. This is an imaginary or fictional one, Mr. Adams.
That is whoever the Ethel Barrymore was in The Corn is Green.
That's exactly right, Mr. Adams, yes. The part of Miss Moffat, I think. Dr. McCracken, were you going to add something to that?
Well, I was going to say that Joe and Little Women.
Did she start a school?
Started a school of her own.
That's right. I think the school comes to life in Little Men, in the sequel to Little Women, doesn't it, as yes. I recollect? Who surprised a school by getting married? Surprised his class, that's to say, by getting married. None of you knows that? The answer is Mr. Chips in Goodbye, Mr. Chips. You don't keep up with your contemporary literature as you should, perhaps, gentlemen. That gives us two wrong out of three and sends $25 plus a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica with the good wishes of Lucky Strike to Miss Gilbert of Salinas, California. How about this one, gentlemen? From Jake Browdy of Brighton, Massachusetts. Let's get three out of four on this. Suppose you were managing a squad of Olympic athletes. In which events would you enter each of these, assuming that they were available? The first is Leander. In what event, Dr. McCracken, would you enter Leander?
Swimming.
In swimming, yes. Who was Leander?
Well, he was a Greek mythical hero who swam the Dardanelles.
Yes.
The Hellespont.
The Hellespont. Now, how...
Well, he didn't. He got drowned.
Well, he practically... He did it for some time.
He swam across, but he got drowned on the way back.
Yes, he made it once. We may say that he achieved his objective, his real objective, Mr. Bryson. And,
but he didn't get home.
He didn't get home, but he got there. How wide is the Hellespont? How much of a feat is that,
about,
by the way?
About 7 miles, I think, there.
A mile.
About 4 miles.
No.
About 4 miles.
Nothing.
From Sestos to Abydos was where he swam, and I think in... that Byron gave it us about 7 miles when he did it. I won't argue the point.
Byron may have, but you know how Byron was. How long did it take Byron to do it? Any idea, Mr. Kieran?
About a page and a half.
That's the space. How about the time? Any idea, Dr. McCracken?
Every time the Odyssey cruise takes place, a lot of college girls swim it every summer.
Apparently it's
before the war.
It's not a difficult thing
it's
to do.
It's less than a mile.
Byron did it...
Seven or eight hours.
Did it in an hour? No, he did it in an hour and 10 minutes.
He did.
That's what he
said.
7 miles.
That's wrong.
4 miles. I said four. Couldn't he have done 4 miles in an hour and 10 minutes?
No, I don't think he could.
Well, he left that record anyway, Mr. Kieran. How about Jupiter? Suppose you wanted to enter Jupiter in an Olympic event. What one? Mr. Bryson.
Throwing the javelin.
Very good. Why do you say that?
Because he shot the thunderbolt.
That's exactly right, Mr. Bryson. Very good. Now, how about Pheidippides? Mr. Adams.
In the running.
Yes. Which event particularly, though?
Marathon.
Marathon, yes. He was the famous runner from Marathon to Athens. How long is that, Mr. Kieran?
Well, that was about 40 kilometers. Now the modern distance is 26 miles, 385 yards. But
that's exact to the yard. That's exactly right.
Right.
And what was the famous sentence that Pheidippides uttered as he reached his goal.
Rejoice, we count.
Thank you, Mr. Kieran. That's quite right. Now, how about Atalanta? If you want to enter Atalanta, Mr. Kieran.
The sprint.
Yes, the sprint. Women's sprints. Or perhaps men's, for that matter. She did pretty well. Can you, gentlemen, this is from Mrs. E.N. Willis of Dallas, Texas, quote the lines from poetry which begin and end with these words? Get 2 out of 3. These lines begin with the phrase, I stood, and end with the words, church tower. Can you give us everything in between, Mr. Adams?
I stood on the bridge at midnight.
Go ahead. Businesslike opening.
As the clock was striking the hour.
Very good.
And,
Make up a line.
That's the one.
I knew we would get that one.
Something on the old church tower.
Yes, that's fine.
I can't do better than that.
Something about the moon.
And the moon rose idly over the city.
Leave out your idly.
And the moon rose over the city.
The moon rose
behind
over the city.
Behind the old church.
Behind the dark church tower. Very good. Now, here's another set of openings and endings. Begins a primrose and ends nothing more. Mr. Bryson.
A primrose by the river's bank.
Brim.
A primrose was to him and nothing more.
That's wrong.
I left out a line.
Yes. Mr. Adams, what's the second line?
Wordsworth wrote it. Let me get that.
That's right. That's quite right, Mr. Bryson.
A primrose by a river's brim.
Yes. And how does it go on?
A yellow primrose was to him, and it was nothing more.
Yes, exactly right. Now, beginning full many and ending desert air. How about that? Mr. Kieran. Good?
Too easy. Full many a gem of purest ray, serene the dark unfathomed caves of ocean bear.
And so it goes. That's quite right. This evening, Lucky Strike has cheerfully paid out, or at least it says cheerfully here, $100 and 4 sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Thank you, Dr. McCracken and Dr. Bryson, for giving us a chance to educate you this evening. Next week, our Levant-Adams-Kieran combination will be supported, listen carefully, by the irrepressible, undauntable, temperamental, and infinitely variable president of the Brooklyn Dodgers, Mr. Larry MacPhail. Now, remember, for every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $10. If the question stumps our experts, you not only get $25 more, but in addition, the complete 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send letters with questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Information, Please, on Tuned to Yesterday from August 1st, 1941 on NBC. Often, Information, Please tapped Hollywood for special guests and the world of literati, and also academia, as among the guests we heard Henry McCracken, president of Vassar College, and that wouldn't be the first time Information, Please asked someone from Vassar to be on the program, like on October 3rd, 1939, where C. Mildred Thompson, assistant history professor at Vassar, was on the program and was given the first question.
When Vassar was founded, how many clothes hooks were allowed each girl and why?
Vassar was founded in 1861.
Yes, so far you're all right, Miss Thompson.
Yes, I think I know that. And I heard that they had 2 clothes hooks, one to hang on the everyday dress, and she took it off at night, and one for the Sunday dress.
My information is somewhat different from yours, Miss Thompson.
Well, they weren't hooks, they were pegs.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I should have known better than to have an expert with as precise knowledge as yours on this program. I'm quite sure you're right, though I understand that the 2 hooks in those days were meant one for the extra dress, as you say, that the girl wasn't wearing, and the other for her nightgown, if I may say so.
Well, you wouldn't expect me to be so indelicate, Adam.
No. On the other hand, Miss Thompson, I fail to see why you should expect me to be so indelicate.
See Mildred Thompson of Vassar College appearing on Information, Please, in 1939. It's an hour of quiz programs on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. And now on to Second Chance, a mix of quiz and interview show hosted by Johnny Olson from August 3rd, 1955 on NBC.
If at first you don't succeed, there's always a second chance.
That's the voice of a famous personality who has experienced a second chance in life. And I'm about to challenge someone somewhere in the United States to identify that mystery voice for over $1,200 in cash and prizes. Also, you'll hear real people revealing dramatic details of their lives on this, the transcribed Second Chance program. everybody. This is your host, Johnny Olson, welcoming you to Second Chance, the program that brings you real people telling their own stories and proving that if at first you don't succeed, there's always a second chance. And today you'll meet Mr. Marks, a personnel manager who is looking for a second chance to fire his secretary wife. He's here to seek your advice on this very peculiar problem. But first, let me give you another clue in our big Mystery Voice contest. Over $1,200 in cash and prizes awaits the lucky home listener who can identify this famous second chance voice.
Across cities, hamlets, and desert sands, led by a pair of noble hands.
I think it would be well to repeat that new clue for you because a lot of you folks are writing them down, I know, and here's one more to add. Across cities, hamlets, and desert sands, led by a pair of noble hands. That's the actual voice that you just heard of our famous Mystery Voice personality who also had a second chance in life. And later I'll be calling one of you lucky listeners at home who submitted a postcard with your phone number for a crack at our tempting jackpot. Incidentally, our address is Second Chance, Box 423, Radio City Station, New York, 19, New York. You know, the more cards you send in, the more increases of your chances of being called are. All of them go into a huge barrel, and each day we select one for that very important phone call. So send in your cards with your telephone number, with your name and your address on it. The more the merrier, the better chances you have of being called, and there's $1,200 in cash and prizes there. And right now it's time to meet Mr. Marks, our studio guest. You know, the other day I read a very interesting item in the paper, and I'm sure many of you folks did too, about a cop who gave his wife a parking ticket. And it certainly must have been a difficult decision to make, because even though he was right in doing his duty, wow, there must have been a lot of fur flying at home that night. But you know, many times a man finds himself sort of between the devil and the deep blue sea in trying to make a decision that involves his work and his home life. Such a man is Mr. Aaron Marks. Hello, Mr. Marks, and welcome to Second Chance.
Oh, Johnny, it's nice being here, and I hope you can help me out of my predicament.
Well, I hope we can, too, Mr. Marks. What kind of a predicament are you in?
Well, I'm a personnel manager, and my wife is working in the same place. I don't think she should be working there, but she just refused to be fired.
Now, wait a minute. Who's in charge of the hiring and firing, Mr. Marks?
Well, presumably I am, but she just refuses to be fired.
Well, now, when you first hired your wife...
Well, it was 3 years ago when I first hired my wife, and... Except she wasn't my wife at that time.
Oh, I see.
And about a year later, we got married. And, for 2 years now, at the time I had my doubts about her working the same place, I just felt it wouldn't work out. And for the past 2 years, I've been unsuccessful in trying to get rid of her. I'm sorry I let her talk me into it because, frankly, it hasn't been working out.
It hasn't been working out. Well, now, what seems to be going wrong, Mr. Mark?
Well, there are certain things you can tell other girls in the office to do that you can't tell your wife.
No, that's true.
For example, there's certain things like expecting to be on time. In our place, like in most places, they allow 1 hour for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
She takes two.
2 hours for lunch?
Yes.
And there's not much you can do about it.
Well, it's difficult. There are typing chores, which many girls don't like to do, and if there's something she doesn't like to do, she just refuses.
What about working overtime?
Working overtime. Well, that used to be something she used to do.
Mm-hmm.
But since we're married, when 5 o'clock comes around, she's watching that clock, out she goes, and whether work's done or not.
I suppose you don't dare bawl her out there at the office.
Well, she's a very sensitive girl, and face it, I love her. I don't want to hurt her feelings. And,
well, now, what effect does this have on the other personnel, on the other girls in the office?
Well, it's naturally, as a personnel manager, I have to try to retain a respect of the other girls, and they feel that I'm showing favors to her, that I permit her to get away with things, which I normally don't allow them to get away with.
You feel it's bad policy, then?
Well, I definitely do, because it's very difficult to retain a respect. In my position, I have to.
Well, now, you naturally discuss this at home with your wife when you're away from the office, huh?
We've discussed it when I get home. Anytime I bring up discussion, she bursts into tears, and... Except for this, we have a very happy marriage, and it's getting to a point where I feel that this is seriously affecting our marriage. It may sound like a simple thing, but the thing has been growing over the past few years, and come to the point where it's the only thing we fight about, and I certainly don't want this to break up our marriage.
Well, now, what does she say about this?
Well, she wouldn't let me come here myself. She feels she wants to come over and defend herself, and I'd rather you wait for herself.
Typical wife. Well, come on over, Mrs. Marks, and welcome to Second Chance. Mrs. Marks, you've heard what your husband has had to say about all this. Why don't you want to quit?
First place, it's a perfectly nice job. I like the job. I know my work. The girls like me. We get along fine. I don't see any reason why I should make a change. Besides which, if I make a change, that means I have to break in a new boss to my way of doing things. That's a lot of work.
Who wants to break in a new
boss?
It
really isn't worth it.
Honestly. You're doing all right with the one you got, is that it?
I think I did very well.
Well, now, if you say that you're such a competent worker and all and so important to the office personnel, how come you can take 2 hours for lunch and how come you don't want to work overtime and you refuse to do statistical typing?
Well, you see, Your Honor.
Don't call me Johnny, will
it's
you?
It's like this. My husband didn't tell you that when I do take extra time for lunch, it's because he needs a shirt or he needs a pair of shorts or something like that. And I buy it for him. Of course, when I come back, it doesn't fit him anyway, so I have to take an extra hour, lunch hour, and bring it back. Of course, they don't like me in the stores at all, but I can't help myself. I'm really doing it for him.
What about the overtime?
Well, I'm paid to work until 5 o'clock. I have to get home. The grocery store does not wait for little old Eunice to get there. I have to buy my food, and I have to go home and prepare dinner for him. He's very mad. When he's mad, when he's hungry, he's horrible.
Oh, I do as much shopping as you do.
You what?
Oh, I do shopping half the time. He certainly doesn't do all the shopping.
Yeah, but he leaves out the things I like. And besides which, when there are crackers at 2 for $23, he buys one box of crackers. It makes me very, very mad that we lost a half a penny.
Erin, what do you say about all these arguments that she has in favor of her working?
Well, as far as her arguments are concerned, I feel that, maybe she has some justification, but if she was working someplace else, they wouldn't permit her any time for these things. We could just manage to do it on at other times. Stores are open, for example, on Thursday evening for shopping, and if it's just a matter of this, I'll do my own shopping. If that's
Erin, you don't feel that a husband should spend 24 hours a day with
him? No, I don't feel that. A husband can't spend 24 hours a day.
I'm very happy spending 24 hours a day with you. And besides this, are you trying to hide something?
You know I'm not trying to hide anything. You know who works in our office. You certainly know there's no reason for
I think you're being unreasonable. When I refuse to do statistical typing, it's because all the other girls refuse to do it too.
Well, somebody has to do it, and I gave you the job.
But why be me? Why should I be the
job? It's not the point of who has to do it.
Please. Now, wait a minute, you two. Now, wait a minute. Let's.
That's hard. Statistical typing is very difficult.
Yes, I agree with you. I agree with you. Get someone else. Look, will you hush for just a minute, please? I think it'd be a good idea to let our audience try to give you some advice on how to solve this problem. It'd be a lot safer, too. Mr. Marks, as you have heard, failed in his first attempt to fire his wife. She refused to quit. The question now is, should he risk a second chance to fire her again? And if he does, what will be the consequences? Well, you've heard Mr. and Mrs. Marks tell their problem about working in the same office together. Mr. Marks feels his wife should quit her job. She doesn't agree with him. Of course, the question arises, will firing her solve his problem, or will it create new ones at home? Do you think Mrs. Marks is right in insisting on keeping her job, or do you think Mr. Marks should take his second chance to fire her? What do you think, ma'am?
Johnny, he definitely should fire her. I'll tell you why.
Why?
I'll tell you why. Just a minute now. I'll tell you why. First of all, if she was at home, she wouldn't have to rush 5 o'clock to the store and rush with her dinner. She would set half a table set. The man would come home. He'd be a very pleasant husband. What are you afraid of? He might have another girl in his office?
Do you agree with this lady that he should fire her?
I do, and if she wants to work, she should get a part-time job, and she can have time to shop and prepare his meals, and everything will be hunky-dory.
Do you agree with this?
A man and his wife should not spend 24 hours every day. All right on weekends.
You agree with this lady?
I think he'd be a fool to fire her. Right now, the only thing they fight about is whether he should fire her or not. But if she sits around the house all day, they'll be fighting about how the house isn't clean. They'll be fighting about how she spends the money. They'll be fighting about everything under the sun.
No, sir. She could get somebody in to clean for her.
Right about that, too.
Oh, no, they won't.
Just a minute. Ma'am, how do you feel on
that? Well, I think that she is justified. I have a brother who is a superintendent of schools, and his wife is a teacher under him, and they get along beautifully. They're together all day, night, and they get along.
You think, then, that he should not fire her?
He should not fire her.
All right. Just a minute. Mrs. Mark, you have a comment on that?
First of all, somebody suggested taking in somebody to clean. That's fine, but if I don't work, who's going to pay for the cleaning woman?
Your husband.
Oh, that's
your husband has
a part-time job will solve that.
Just a minute. Sir, what is your comment?
I think God takes care of connubial felicity, and God will also take care of this situation.
Do you agree with this gentleman, sir?
I feel that the whole answer to this problem is what she said. She said before,
What's the matter? Is there something you don't want me to see in the office?
She's jealous. I think she's just trying to kiss his father.
Just a minute. Do you think that he can fire her, though, without endangering his happy home life?
No,
sir, do you feel it?
I think he ought to fire her. Because he can't expect to have his wife in the office all the time. Sooner or later, she's got to go home. Take for example, what if Mamie wanted to go to Geneva with Ike? Or something.
Just a minute, please. Girls, please. Just a minute. You're pushing me here now. Please.
Well, listen, when she got married to him, she took him for better or for worse. And if I would think, if she don't want to work there, and if he don't want her, let her stay away or go to another place. It isn't good to work together 24 hours. It's true.
You think he's justified in firing her?
Yes, it's better off.
Right. Yes, some of you disagree.
If I was the girl, I would give him notice. I would be independent because it is too a bad problem if a man gives his wife notice. I would be independent and just quit.
Just a minute. Here's a
Why don't you stay home and have a baby? That'll solve the whole problem.
Just a minute, please.
Mrs. Marks,
do you want to comment on that?
It's very nice for other people to tell me to have a baby. I will have a baby when I am ready to have the baby.
Yeah, but I'm ready.
But Mr. Marks is ready.
You better have them when they're young, because when you get old, you won't get any more.
Yes.
One thing I wanted to ask them, do you take separate vacations, or do you both take a vacation together from the office?
No, we take separate vacations. Oh,
That's bad.
Just a minute.
Why do you think
that? That is wrong. You see, if she stayed at home, he worked, then she really needed a vacation, they would take it together.
Well, Gary,
and that's the best time when you take a vacation together. So you could watch each other.
Would you let Mr. Mark say a word, please?
I felt the same way. I feel that this way we haven't been able to have vacations together. And we have a small office force, and it's not possible to break it up as such. So I feel I'd like to take our vacation together, but we certainly can't both go at the same time.
Oh. What sort of other women do you have in the office working for you? What do they look like?
Well, I told her, as far as the others are concerned, she has nothing to worry about.
Well, I think that's her worry. She's secretly jealous of what
might
happen.
Well, if you saw the girl in my office,
I do. I think she doesn't quite trust him, and that's why she's hanging around watching him. And maybe he's just making up these faults about her to get a beautiful blonde around there.
I don't sit around watching him. I have a lot of work to do.
Just a moment, please, ma'am.
You can't solve this problem like this. You have to know the people well. You have to see how they manage in their store and their place. How do you want to do that here? You want to solve a problem looking at Mr. So-and-so and Mrs. So-and-so? They're very nice.
They're very nice, I agree, but they have given all the facts, madam.
But you don't know as you behave in the office.
What we don't know, I'm sure Mr. and Mrs. Marks will tell us, as they have told us. And right now, let's take sort of a general vote here as to how you folks feel in our audience, sort of a straw vote, as it were. And I hope that you will cooperate by standing up and being counted. How many think that Mr. Marks should take his second chance to fire his wife? Stand up and be counted. Thank you very, very much. Would you be seated, please? How many of you think he should let her continue to work in the same office? Stand up and be counted. Only about 10% think that he should let her work, and I would say about 60% of our audience feel that he should go ahead and fire her. Thank you very, very much. Well, Mr. and Mrs. Marks, that's what the majority of our audience thinks, and I hope that we've helped to shed some light on the issue. How do you feel about it now?
Will you give me a letter of recommendation?
Oh, I'd better. I'll give her the best of references. Help me, I will.
If you fire her, Mr. Marks, we'll hire her, I assure you, because she's a very charming woman. Now, each of you folks who offered suggestions here in the audience will receive a nice gift in a beautiful crystal decanter of the champagne fragrance Intoxication by Dorsay, creators of world-famous French perfumes. And, Mr. Marks, we have for you a gift of a lifetime, and for Mrs. Marks, too. A Helbros wristwatch. It's the watch of celebrities with lifetime jewels and unbreakable mainspring. And also a pair of handcuffs to go with it. Thank you very much. Good luck. We'll be back to Second Chance in just a minute.
Hello, everybody. This is Fibber McGee.
And Molly.
We've just heard about an effective way that plain everyday Americans like us can fight communism.
You mean I can fight communism, too? How?
How, Doc? By giving a truth dollar to Radio Free Europe. Your truth dollars pay for 100 words of truth on Radio Free Europe. beam them right through the Iron Curtain to 70 million freedom-hungry people trapped there by the communists.
Radio Free Europe's broadcast helped these people resist communism by uncovering Soviet traitors in their countries, by giving them plain, honest news they can't get from their own commie-controlled press and radio.
You might say Radio Free Europe is keeping the truth turned on.
Well, you can count me in, kids. Who do I give my truth dollars to?
You send them to Crusade for Freedom, care of your local postmaster.
And, folks, you can fight communism, too, by sending truth dollars to support Radio Free Europe.
Send one today to Crusade for Freedom, care of your postmaster.
And now let's rejoin Second Chance. Okay, by the clock, it's Mystery Voice phone call time. That means one of you home listeners who sent in your phone number to get a chance at our $1,200 jackpot of cash and prizes. Bob is the call in already. Well, good. Hello, this is Johnny Olson, Second Chance, New York. Who's on the line, please? Mrs. Edith Lyons, and where are you speaking from, Mrs. Lyons? Miami, Florida. Well, how nice to talk with you on the telephone. If you get an opportunity, say hello to my good friend Jack Ross and Chuck Posner out there at the Hotel Algiers, will you? Nice to have you here on the telephone. I want to tell you now what you can win if you come up with the right answer to our Mystery Voice contest. You've been listening to Second Chance right along? Very good. Well, then you'll know that the makers of Tetley Tea will start a special Christmas fund in your name, $1 a day for the next 6 months. And remember, Tetley Tea is preferred by real tea drinkers. You'll also get a $100 bank account from the makers of Beacon Wax. And Beacon Wax gives the hardest, longest, and brightest gloss and is guaranteed to outshine and outlast other waxes. And still, there's another cash prize, a $100 savings bond from Tony. The all-new home permanent that's odor-free, trouble-free, and frizz-free as a wave can be. And for your favorite man, a three-piece gold set of King's Men toiletries, including a bottle of King's Men deodorant that keeps you shower fresh all day. And Mrs. Lyons, Second Chance will brighten up your kitchen with a brand-new RCA Estate Deluxe gas range. And there's a rotary lawnmower from the nation's leading power mower manufacturer, Motomower. And for you and your hubby, Arthur Murray will give you both $100 worth of dancing lessons at your favorite Arthur Murray studio. Now, besides all these many gifts and cash prizes, there's a vacation for you in New York. You'll enjoy your stay here at the famous Henry Hudson Hotel as guests of the hotel. And for pocket money, $50 in traveler's checks. For the trip, a magnificent three-piece set of Amelia Earhart luggage. You're still with me? Good girl. And to top off the jackpot, a Hellbros wristwatch, the gift of a lifetime. World-famous Hellbros, the watch of celebrities with lifetime jewels and unbreakable mainsprings. $1,200 in cash and prizes. Now, before you give me the answer, I want to play some clues for you, and here's the mystery voice.
Where the Duke doth roam is the place I call home. In Illinois, you'll find my name. No reason why the name's the same.
Okay, Mrs. Lyons, you've heard the mystery voice. Now, tell you what. I'm going to give you just 1 minute to make up your mind on who you think this famous Second Chance mystery voice is. Now, we'll be back with you in just 1 minute to get your answer following this important announcement.
Friends, this is Paul Jones of the National Safety Council. We have a little safety jingle here that we think may save your life.
When you're near a river crossing, look and listen carefully. When you're near a river crossing, do your best to be very, very, very watchful, very, very wide awake. When you're near a river crossing, give yourself a break and always driver take a look, driver take a look, driver take a look around and see. See the warning sign, hear the warning sound. When you're near a railroad crossing, pay close attention to the warning. Pay close attention to the railroad signal. Pay close attention to the warning when you're near a railroad crossing.
And now back to Second Chance. All right, Mrs. Lyons, this is Edith Lyons of Miami, Florida. I've given you 1 minute there to make up your mind who you think the mystery voice is for over $1,200 in cash and prizes. Who do you think it is?
Who?
Claire Booth Luce? Oh, I'm sorry that's not the right answer, Mrs. Lyons. But say, I've got something real nice for you, a gleaming 8-cup automatic Miromatic coffee percolator. Makes a delicious cup of coffee and keeps it drinking hot for hours. And thanks a lot for sending in your card. Goodbye, Mrs. Lyons. Wowie. She didn't come up with the right answer, but she was very close. She won a lovely gift just the same. And you, too, can participate in our Mystery Voice phone call contest by sending in your phone number on a postcard to Second Chance, Box 423, Radio City Station, New York 19, New York. And now, here's a man with a message.
Hi, baby. I'm home.
Hi, hon. Been working hard today?
Not too hard. Had an important conference with my banker today.
Banker? My, are you the important fellow. Didn't mortgage the house, I hope.
Nope. I just dropped in to pick this up. Isn't it beautiful?
United States Savings Bond Series H, $1,000. Why, that's wonderful. Is it just like our other savings bonds?
Nope. The Series H bonds pay you a current income. You see, the mailman will bring us an interest check from Uncle Sam every 6 months. At good compound interest, too.
Yes, if you want current income on a top-flight investment, ask your banker about Series H United States Savings Bonds.
Series H savings bonds pay a fine return. 3% interest compounded semi-annually when held to maturity.
You get an interest check in the mail every 6 months.
And if you need cash meanwhile, you can redeem the bonds at par after the first 6 months.
Series H savings bonds are sold in denominations of $500 and up.
Invest in Series H savings bonds, a sure way to save for your future.
Well, folks, that just about brings us to the end of another transcribed Second Chance program. I'm glad you had us tuned in. And today you heard the problem of Mr. Aaron Marks, who married his secretary and wants to know how he can take a second chance to fire her without disrupting his home life. And say, if you, the listening audience, would like to add your comments to those already expressed by our studio audience concerning Mr. Marks' problem, well, feel free to do so, will you? I'm sure he'd be glad to hear from you, and I'll pass the letters along to him. Send them to Mr. Marks in care of Second Chance, Box 423, Radio City Station, New York, 19, New York. And while you're at it, why don't you enter your name and phone number in our Mystery Voice contest? Just a 2-cent postcard might bring you a gigantic jackpot. There's $1,200 at stake right now, cash and prizes. And the address again is Second Chance, Box 423, Radio City Station, New York, 19. Till tomorrow, I'll be back with another dramatic Second Chance story, then plus another Mystery Voice phone call. Johnny Olson in New York. Goodbye. We'll see you tomorrow.
Weekday mornings, hear the news with Kenneth Banghart over most NBC radio stations.
Second Chance on Tuned to Yesterday from August 3rd, 1955 on NBC. And that brings to a close this hour of quiz shows on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. It's been a pleasure.